First of all, good morning, everybody, and thank you to the museum manager, the board of trustees, the friends of the museum, but also the people of Hope Bay. I'm particularly happy to be here in this community because I see this museum not as a building, but as a journey. And whenever I travel, when my children were still very young, I always traveled during the school holidays. I cannot do it any more now because Mama Zilla says, what is a holiday? But while I was having the privilege of teaching for 20 years, I took the time during my school holidays to travel all over South Africa. And first thing in a new town, I look for the I when you enter the town, information. I normally stop there with my children and my wife, and they ask, where's the library and where's the museum, as Haneke indicated. And I normally spend time in the museum because there's a rich history in museums. But now my children, one is 21, the other one is 14. When I come into a town, they tell me, Daddy, you're not going to take us to a place that's free again. Hulle wil na 'n mall toe gaan waar die pa moet geld uitgee. But I told him I'm still the boss of the house. And as long as I am in charge of that family, they will visit the places I visit. It's not called dictatorship, it's called leadership. For those of you who think it is dictatorship, it is leadership in the family. And I go to museums because I have discovered that there's something deep in a museum. I've discovered that a museum tells a story. Museums tells a narrative. But what I have also discovered is that in a complex plural society like South Africa, many people have deep pain in their hearts because of things that happened before, sometimes because of things that happens today. But I've also seen that as you progress through the museums, there's something that can really touch you and change your mind. I was last year in the British Museum. When I went there, I saw thousands of people queuing to go to a museum. When you go to museums in the Netherlands, you see thousands of people going to the museum. That's not the case on the African continent. And you cannot progress. Your development is linked, for me, to the extent that there are queues outside of a museum. When I see long queues on a Saturday, people wanting, and Sundays wanting to go to a museum, I see the level of your development. And so it is important that we continue to encourage people to visit museums. But I've seen a transformation in museums. I'm seeing now all over where I go, museums reflecting the history of the people. Also the title of Hout Bay and its people being reflected. I see in museums, in the Togreyers that I recently visited in Ceres, I see the pictures of people who are alive in that local town, in the Rooikampie in Ceres, in Unduli and in Bella Vista. I see young boys of that age, I see their pictures in the museum. I see their family tree in the museum. It is to facilitate this transition that we call social inclusion. When you see thousands of people queuing up, it is because they want to be part of the museum. But today, this room is pretty much full. For me, this is the project of social inclusion. I always tell the story of the museum in Simonstown, and Cathy is here. When you go through that museum from the beginning through the end, you experience a personal transformation. Because if you had any hate in your heart, when you enter the Simonstown Museum, you will leave that museum with no more hate in your heart. And that's what museums does. I know a man with the name of Julius Malema is really deeply hurt. And when he speaks, you can feel the pain in his heart. But if you take Julius Malema into the Simonstown Museum and many of our other museums, and you take him through the history of that town, I'm quite convinced that Julius Malema will be a different person when he walks out of that museum. So museums are also very powerful tools to promote what I call spiritual intelligence. But it's another narrative that I want to talk about, and it's a narrative that I see all happening all over South Africa, also in museums. And so this town has a history of pain and joy. And sometimes I think pain is on this side and joy is on that side. But I've discovered that pain is on both sides and in the equal sides. And to put it in one pot, when you mix it, you get what I call cultural warmth. Now, what is cultural warmth? That's the business of museums, is to promote cultural warmth. Now, cultural warmth, ladies and gentlemen, manifests its the best when we take a step back in terms of our own culture, which I call ethnocentricity, and allow other cultures to enter us. I had this experience about 20 years ago when my friend Musa Adam, in the Northern Cape, in the Hantam, he's a Muslim and I'm a Christian. But when I go to his house in Kalfinia and his wife prepare a meal for us and we sit down, Llewellyn, he asked me to pray. Why do you think a Muslim man in his own house, in his own privacy, take a step back and allow something else to happen in his house called religion? I think it's because my friend Musa understands the architecture of cultural warmth. Cultural warmth asks of ourselves to take a step back so that something else, another culture, can reach you, can touch you, can bless you, but can also inspire you. And so you can imagine that when Musa come to Cape Town to visit my house, I'm looking for the best halal butchery in town. Because it's not about my culture, it's now about his culture. And so I found this butchery, halal. It's in Elsie's River, it's called Excellent Meat Market. And so this is what cultural warmth is about, and this is the space of museums. But Mr. Mandela did the same in 1995 when he was 77 years old. He paid a visit to Orania in the Northern Cape. Mr. Mandela was 77 years old and he went to visit Betsy Verwoerd. And Betsy Verwoerd was 94 at the time. Now you can imagine, ma'am, a woman of that age, 94, a president coming to visit her, wondering what is happening here, helicopters, blue lights, police, dogs and everything in the town. I mean, there were more police people in Orania than the residents of Orania. And here's President Mandela coming to visit Betsy Verwoerd. Now, you know, Betsy Verwoerd is the wife of the former president, Hendrik Verwoerd. So you can imagine the anxiety that she had in her heart. But when Mr. Mandela came there, she served him rooibos tea in the best tea set in the house, because he knew what the protocol was when the head of state come to visit you as a former first lady. And so she served him rooibos tea and cooked sisters. In my narrative, she didn't offer him cooked sisters, but she offered him cultural warmth. In return, Mr. Mandela didn't speak English to her, he spoke to her in Afrikaans. In my narrative, he didn't speak Afrikaans, he spoke the language of cultural warmth. And so, museums are the new architects, the foundations of cultural warmth. To take a step back, because when you take a step back, you allow something beautiful to happen to you. I have a friend in Germany, whenever he comes to my house, I put on my German apron, and I put a South African apron on to him, and I tell him, let's tackle the kitchen. And he frequently try out South African food and I try out German food. This is the architecture of cultural warmth. And so, colleagues, a museum is no more a building. A museum is the foundation to build cultural warmth. A museum is really a long journey to tell us about the pretext, the yesterday, the text, today, but also the post-tax, where this country is going to. When you have a society where there's lots of pain, you need to come to the museum, because this is also a spiritual home where you make peace with yourself. Sometimes politicians need to visit more museums, because sometimes I hear a lot of noise, but I don't hear substance. And I tell my colleagues, don't raise your voice, improve your argument. And you must visit a museum to really improve your argument, because the museum captures the spirit of South Africa. And I'm particularly happy that behind me is the South African flag, because in a complex plural society, it is very important to have powerful symbols. And the symbols is what unite people in South Africa. And all over South Africa, where we go, we have seen what happened in the World Cup. When we won the World Cup, people came together and they were united. And so we know what has happened a year or two ago here in Hout Bay, the violence, the crime, the pain, and a community at conflict. And this museum, with this exhibition, is taking the efforts and building the foundation of really bringing people together and let people heal the nation, the republic. Where's my ID? I am a citizen of the republic. And so, colleagues, it is really for me a joy and a deep honor to be here today, because this is part of a healing process. When you look at violence and crime all over the world right now, you see it is at places where ethnocentricity is the focus. Ethnocentricity say only me and my culture matters. If you have a society, if you look now where there's war in the world and civil war and conflict, where there is currently fighting in the Middle East, in North Africa, all over the world where the people are now fighting, it is because people promote ethnocentricity. If you look at societies where there's peace, it is because there's cultural warmth. In this town, we are planting the seeds of cultural warmth with this exhibition today. I want to conclude, as we celebrate Heritage Month, as we celebrate this exhibition, Hout Bay and its people, we celebrate it with a subtext that I want to call Your Culture, My Culture, Our Heritage. And when you start always with your culture, in other words, the culture of the other person, then my culture, then our heritage. I end off with a narrative of a story so that you can really understand why your culture, my culture, our heritage matters. When I was young and after my first few years of marriage, I came home one day with a skapkop, Luwale, with a smiley. When I came home with it, my wife said, "What is that?" I said, "It's my culture." She said to me, "Not in my house." I said, "No, it's fine, I'll cook it in my yard." So I cooked it, and my children could hear that there's some friction between the mother and the father, and they just heard the word culture. And my wife said, "Not in my kitchen." It's like the story of "Don't touch me on my kitchen studio." So when I finished cooking my smiley, my wife said, "Where are you going to eat it?" She said, "Not in my kitchen." I said, "It's fine, I'll eat it outside in my yard. I've got a big yard." And as I was sitting there, my children looked at me with big eyes. And they said to my wife, "Mommy, don't kiss that man anymore." Because he's going to eat the skapkop. And at that note, I was naughty. I kissed the skapkop. And as I was eating, my children looked at me with big eyes. And I remember as I was eating it, they just said, "Not in my kitchen." my children are now teenagers, and when I travel on the road, once a year I take the train or the bus. Last year I took the bus from Cape Town to Kimberley, and as we pass, you must pass Laingsburg. So when we were at Mikiesfontein, my children asked me, "Daddy, are you not going to buy us some afval in Laingsburg?" But they started off with, "Not in my kitchen. What is that?" I said, "It's my culture from my father." And now my son is 21, and when we were at Mikiesfontein with the bus, he said, "Daddy, please phone the people in Laingsburg, order the afval, so when the bus stops, then we can eat some afval." I tell you the story because in South African politics, it is not in my kitchen. Keep your culture where it belongs, there in your yard. To a stage where my children tell me, "Daddy, phone the people, we want to order some afval." It took me 21 years. So the healing process takes time, even in your own family, to find your culture. To start with your culture, my culture, our heritage. So I'm a first-class witness of what it means to when people tell you, "Not in my kitchen." And so you must allow for people over time, through cultural warmth, to embrace it in a way that my children now embrace it. But they embrace it now that ek nou glad kam rak. Because when I was in that bus, ma'am, for 4 takeaway afvals from the Laingsburg Country Lodge, little did I know the smell of afval will travel all over the bus. And so when I told my wife, "Ek raak nou skaam dat die hele bus nou raak na afval ruik," she said to me, "No, it's not afval. They smell your culture." And so, colleagues, I tell you the story so that you understand that cultural warmth manifests through food, it manifests through the music, it manifests through language, it manifests the way we are dressing ourselves. And so I want to thank people, because last year, was it 2 years ago, Daniel, I went to the Boer Kaap to take part in a Malay food, because we wanted to enjoy the Malay culture. But we decided, and Daniel had the wisdom, and he said, "Minister, don't just eat Malay food. Go on a Malay cooking course." So when we went to the lady's house, she took off our jackets and she put us on an apron on. She sent us across the street in the Boer Kaap, because there's a spice shop. She showed us how you mix the spice and buy the right spice. In the house, she took us in the kitchen and we made a nice Malay. We had a 2-hour Malay cooking course. And we made the food ourselves, me and Minister Windy. And we served the food and we enjoyed ourselves. And that's what cultural warmth is to get off your pedestal and move into another space. And that space is what I call cultural warmth. Your culture, my culture, our heritage. I thank you.